This Weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Big data drive church membership. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal on This Weekend. Here's what we have for you this hour. With an assist from big data, some churches across the country are targeting new members. Spider-Man has been an extraordinary hit for Sony. Will its success have any effect on the movie theater industry? The new year is underway. Did you make resolutions that are realistic and achievable? Vincent van Gogh became one of the entertainment world's biggest stars in 2021.
Imagine that there were, you know, essentially photographic images of the work, you know, essentially reproductions of the work or just photos of the work that are projected in these cavernous venues.
Charles Passy of Market Watch will be along later in the show with that story. How are some churches targeting new members? With some help from big data. Here with details is Khadija Safdar of the Wall Street Journal. Khadija, your story profiles a small company called Glue. What is that and what does it do?
Glue is a small company that has put itself at the forefront of an effort to analyze Americans' personal data, and they're helping churches reach people who are most likely to become congregants, and those are often people in crisis. So such as people struggling with grief, debt, maybe on the verge of divorce, mental health issues.
How exactly is Glue collecting this data?
So Glue uses third-party data brokers. One of them that we mentioned in the story was Wunderman, which then terminated its relationship with Glue. But they are used multiple third-party data brokers, but then they also collect data from churches themselves, and they work with addiction recovery centers as well.
How does Glue make money?
Glue makes money by the churches paying a subscription service. So you can be either a free user or a premium user. And I think the number we quote in the story is about $1,500 a year for a premium user.
Now, your story mentions another Wall Street Journal story reporting on the company, and then Glue said it was no longer using mental health data. Talk about that whole thing. How did that happen?
So so I've been reporting the story for a couple months, and during the course of that, a lot of things changed. Glue said that, like you said, that they're no longer. I had asked the company several times about how they're collecting mental health data, where they're getting this data from, and they cited confidentiality agreements, not being able to share that. And then closer to time of publication, the CEO said that they're just no longer doing that anymore. So we included that in the story. And then Wunderman, which was one of their largest data providers, terminated the relationship and said that they were deleting the data.
We're speaking with Khadija Safdar of the Wall Street Journal. Can you give us some examples of churches that are using this information? Like what kind of church?
So it runs across the spectrum, Protestant churches, Catholic churches. One of the churches that we cited in the story was Westside Family Church in Kansas. It's a really large non-denominational church, and they are using it to find people in various stages of distress and crisis around the community, and they offer services. So you'll see an ad on Facebook or on other parts of the web.
Can they target individual people? Do they know people's names?
So this is a question that came up a lot with Glue, and I wanted to understand that as well. Glue said that at no point in time did they share the names or exact locations of people with churches or any of their clients. So it's always been anonymized to the user. But then last year also they anonymized third-party data within their own databases in light of just privacy concerns and changing landscape with privacy.
You know, if I'm Joe Smith and I have a problem with alcohol and I start getting ads targeting me saying, come to this church if you have an alcohol problem, I would be awfully suspicious, right?
Right. I mean, it is, there are a lot of questions that this raises, and there are privacy concerns, and there's thoughts around it, because this is, they are targeting people around some of the most difficult moments of their lives, while churches are, I mean, churches say they're trying to help them, but that is a valid concern that as something that has come up during the course of the reporting.
On the church side of things, does it seem like they're trying to help people? Or are they trying to get new members to give them money so they can keep going?
I think it's a bit of both. Some of the churches that I talked to said that they are just purely trying to help people. They don't care if people become members or not. And then some of the churches said that they were pretty open about the fact that they really are trying to increase their membership.
This all sounds rather controversial, and the fact that your reporting has caused some changes to be made. Do you see more changes on the horizon with this company, Glue?
We'll have to see what happens. They are switching to a different data provider, and I do plan to stay in the loop with what happens. But I do think this just sort of speaks to the broader trend. Like, the targeted ads are here to stay, and I think it would make sense that they are in the business world. They're in the political firms are using them, and now religious organizations are.
Did any of your reporting surprise you in what you found?
I think just the whole idea surprised me, and it probably shouldn't have, because it makes total sense that if this technology is available to businesses, it's available to in politics, why wouldn't it be available to a religious organization? But I think that the application is just so different, because a company looks at your purchase history, sees what you've bought, and then targets you. Here, they're trying to find out whether they can help you. So they're targeting people who are in crisis. They're figuring out whether they have a relationship in trouble.
Khadija Safdar of The Wall Street Journal.
What are your 2022 business goals? Simplified IT? More security? Dell Technologies has the expertise to help you. From transforming your digital workspaces to providing comprehensive end-to-end IT solutions, get high-performance computers featuring Windows 11 Pro with powerful hardware-based security and savings up to 45% during Dell's New Year event sale. Get special financing through Dell Financial Services. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
What's ahead in the sports world in 2022? Bill Shea of The Athletic has a look ahead. Bill, of course, we have to start with the pandemic. How may that continue to affect the business of sports?
I think that's going to be the story, at least for a while. And in 2022, I mean, we've already seen what the latest variant has done with canceled bowl games and college football, NBA and NHL games moved around, star players sidelined, some of the star players on the NBA's, key critical Christmas Day broadcasts were sidelined. So that's going to be the story for a while until we figure out how to get through this thing in a safe way that makes sense.
Bill, coming up shortly is the Olympics, and while that usually draws many eyes and a lot of excitement, it seems to be dwindling in popularity in some respects. What do we think about the Winter Olympics in Beijing?
Well, for some folks, it's going to be the obvious subtext of, it's China. it is a communist authoritarian regime, and there's all of the various human rights and civil rights questions around that. And every time there is some sort of major sporting event with China, that's a big topic of conversation, and one we're, much like the pandemic, I think probably going to wrestle with for a while. The NHL's not sending, its players to the Olympics. I'm sure that's a big bummer for a lot of those guys and fans and things like that. Olympics are often really driven by storyline.
We're speaking with Bill Shea of The Athletic. Now, at this point, Major League Baseball experiencing a lockout. What are the chances the season gets off on time?
I think it will happen, or happen with minimal delay, simply because, again, the pandemic was such a disaster for baseball last year. There was a lot of teams that had to borrow money you know, $100 million or more in some cases in 2020 to pay the bills. You know, when they played just a 60-game season last year, we got a full season in with limited attendance in the start, and that fleshed out as things did calm down a bit. But I think there is definite financial pressures more than in past labor stoppages, and it's been a long time, for a deal to get done. And neither side, I don't think either wants to get into a place where the public is basically angry at both sides, you know, millionaires versus billionaire sort of thing, while we're in the middle of the pandemic and everything else that is going on in our lives right now.
Speaking of money, this year we had the name, image, and likeness come to the fore. It's been called the Wild West. Will there be some more clarity when it comes to NIL?
Yeah, I think there will be some. I think we will be in an age of experimentation from both the athlete side and the corporate side and the school and conference side and NCAA side as well, as we sort of feel our way around on how this is going to work. You know, what is, you know, from a student perspective, what is the best thing? From a brand or a company, what do they want to get out of it? It's been really interesting so far. We've seen some cases where companies did big deals with athletes who didn't end up performing or being a big star. We saw other brands put big investment into, like, non-star, you know, not necessarily the quarterback or the point guard or things like that. And we've seen, like, volleyball teams and swimmers and things get deals, which I think is great that it's the money gets spread around. But I think it's going to still take a couple years so everybody sort of gets a sense of, you know, what is most effective on this.
Again, speaking of money, gambling has been widely accepted in many fronts now, and sports gambling has absolutely exploded this year. Are we going to continue to see it rise to this level, or will there be some leveling off and some regulations put in place?
I think it's probably both. It's not legal in all states, as state legislatures or voters approve things in various states and they get their protocols sorted out. There will be the explosion of billboards and TV commercials and signs everywhere in that city or state for things like that. I live in Metro Detroit, and for the last year or two, if it's not a recreational cannabis billboard, it's a DraftKings billboard or something like that alongside the highways, and the TV commercials are everywhere. That will start to settle out. You know, it's these different companies trying to get market share, trying to get, you know, each gambler's business.
Bill, are we still watching sports on TV?
Yeah, 2020 was a really odd year for sports and television. For the first couple of months of the pandemic, television viewership went up. It had been going, especially in prime time, it had been going down for years before the pandemic. Started to go up early as we all sat at home in the pandemic, and then just the bottom fell out. For various reasons, cord cutting, people going outside doing things, viewership for everything fell through the floor.
Bill Shea of The Athletic.
If you've been back at the office lately, have you noticed how work attire has changed? The days of stuffy, uncomfortable clothes is gone, thankfully. And for the new wardrobe, Cuts Clothing is on the cutting edge of casual. They've elevated the classic t-shirt to something that fits the workday, the nightlife, and you perfectly. I know firsthand, I love my Cuts shirts. They're flexible, willing to move with me, and they're tough. Perfect for when I'm in the office or a night out. Get them for yourself now, and you'll not only look good at this year's holiday events, you'll look good and stay comfortable. There's something for everyone on my list and yours, not just t-shirts. There's polos, bomber jackets, joggers, and more. Get them all from Cuts Clothing now. And don't just save time, save money too. Cuts has your holiday shopping covered with a ton of new products and special site-exclusive offers every day in December. Plus, get 15% off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S, cutsclothing.com/Gordon to get 15% off. Plus, can't miss daily deals. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Spider-Man, Sony's latest blockbuster, has given a last-minute boost to theaters, but full recovery is far from certain. More from this weekend's Jim Chesko.
Spider-Man No Way Home is by far Hollywood's biggest hit since the pandemic hit, but Now what for the movie industry? Well, let's talk about it with Wall Street Journal tech reporter Dan Gallagher. Dan, we've seen some impressive box office numbers for this new Marvel Sony Pictures Spidey movie. Are industry watchers surprised at just how well it's doing?
Yes and no. I mean, I think there was a strong sense it was going to do well. Pre-sales were strong. This is a popular franchise, especially the last, the two movies before it that kind of involved this unusual team-up with Disney's Marvel Universe, because remember, the Spider-Man as a movie property is owned by Sony. I think there was an expectation it would do well, but I think it certainly exceeded even the highest expectation.
So as 2021 winds down, how is the movie theater business doing otherwise compared to pre-pandemic times?
Well, I mean, not great. I mean, frankly, we've got, and I think, I don't think there's a huge surprise. I don't think anybody expected 2021 to be a full return to what it was before. But I was covering this question last year, and there was an expectation that 2021 would do better than it has.
Amid the pandemic, several movies this year, including Black Widow, debuted simultaneously in theaters and on the various streaming services. In retrospect, was that a smart move or a mistake?
Well, it would depend on who you ask, and the problem is that the data to make that kind of conclusion isn't very public. You know, if you take Disney claimed that Black Widow did very good business because they had put it on Disney Plus, but you had to, even if you were a Disney Plus subscriber, you had to pay $30 to watch it. You know, it looks like at least a couple million Disney Plus accounts did that based on the number they gave. So you combine that with the box office, I think that didn't do badly for Disney, but there's a big debate as to whether it would have done better if they had just put it in theaters exclusively. And that debate was actually amplified by the fact that they ended up in a lawsuit with Scarlett Johansson over that very question. But we've seen with other movies that have gone, you know, like the movies from Warner Brothers that have gone on HBO Max the day that they went to theaters for no additional charge.
Well, I saw both the new Spider-Man movie and Steven Spielberg's take on West Side Story in theaters. Enjoyed both of them, but West Side Story, despite generally very good reviews, is looking like a bomb. Why is that?
I think part of what we're seeing is that while some moviegoers are ready to return, even given the public health situation, it's not equal across all of them. If you consider people who were interested in movies before the pandemic, there's evidence that older moviegoers are more hesitant. You know, obviously they might, at a certain age range, maybe they feel more vulnerable to the pandemic. In the Wall Street Journal, one of my colleagues ran a story recently with some data showing that women over the age of 35 weren't coming back the way they were before. And that could have hurt a movie like West Side Story as well.
Yeah. So the pandemic is still very much with us, unfortunately. So what is the outlook for the movie industry now as we flip the calendar and enter 2022?
I think it's pretty cautious. You know, I think the Wall Street analysts that I see in track aren't projecting a full return to normal. You know, there's some variance in the numbers, but some are projecting something like 60% of 2019's numbers. Summer is high, more like in the 80% range. Right now, the plan is there's actually going to be a lot of movies in the pipeline, because remember, there were some movies that actually were supposed to come out even this year and were pushed. One of those is this new Top Gun movie. So I think there's going to be a big release slate of kind of movies that have been backed up.
Dan Gallagher of the Wall Street Journal with this weekend's Jim Chesko. It's coming up on 30 minutes past the hour on This Weekend.
We don't go online the way we used to. These days, we have instant access for everything from photos to our finances right on our devices. We're almost always connected. And without the right online protection, you're almost always vulnerable to hackers. That's why there's Aura. Aura is a new type of security service that protects all of your online information and devices with one simple subscription. It's all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and so much more. Aura provides digital security protection to keep your online finances, personal information, and tech safe from online threats with an easy online dashboard and alerts sent straight to your phone. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. And for a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners up to 40% off plans when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get complete protection and savings of up to 40%. That's A-U-R-A, aura.com/Gordon.
Have you lined up your New Year's resolutions? There's a right and wrong way to do it. Here with some tips is Lee Richardson, a professional counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center. Lee, how can you not set yourself up to fail?
I think it all starts with what expectations you set. You know, setting expectations that are realistic is really important. You know, weight loss is one of the things that so many people, we all talk about every year. And, you know, I'll hear, oh, I want to lose 50 pounds in the first 2 months. How realistic is that? You know, maybe set that up as I'd really like to lose 15 pounds within the next 2 months. And then think about, okay, how am I going to do that? Am I going to introduce exercise? Am I going to really focus on changing what I eat, when I eat? So, you know, I think that we all need goals.
We probably have made a lot of excuses for things over the past 2 years or so. How can you not let the pandemic impede what your goals are and reaching them?
Well, I think that the last 2 years have been very difficult. We've all been introduced to stress in a way that we've never known before. And so, you know, it's left us all at a lot of the time in that fight, flight, or freeze mode. You know, that's our body. We don't know whether to run, to hide, to just lay on the floor in the fetal position. And I think that impacts our thinking on a cumulative basis. And that's something that if I had one piece of advice to give to people for 2022, it would be kind to yourself and be kind to others.
Lee, should you write down your goals and or tell other people what your resolutions are? Does that help in any way achieve them?
I think it does. I think, you know, seeing it in paper formalizes it. For me, when I write it down, okay, when I put it on the list, it's going to get done. And I think having other people to support you and encourage you is very helpful. I mean, there are times where I don't want to do things that I know I need to do. But if a colleague can show some support or remind me how important it is, oh, I do need to do that. It's motivating for me.
We're speaking with Lee Richardson, a professional counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center, about resolutions for New Year's and maybe other times. Lee, can you allow yourself to slip up? And if you do slip up, how do you keep from being totally derailed?
Of course you can allow yourself to slip up. And when you do, when we all get off track, instead of shaming and blaming ourselves and getting that negative talk going in our head, we need to tell ourselves it's okay. It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to hit a bump in the rug. But you got to get right back up and get right back on it.
We always, of course, associate resolutions with New Year's, but does it make sense to continually change these and work on them all year long and not call them New Year's resolutions, but just attainable goals?
Absolutely. And I think that any goal that we set for the beginning of the year will be one that we will have to pay attention to all year long, because we're going to have to go back and check in. Okay, well, now I tried it this way and it didn't work so well. Okay, well, what else could you do?
Lee, you mentioned weight loss is probably being one of the top goals that people have. Also, exercise, probably eating right. What are some of the other resolutions that you hear a lot about?
Well, I hear a lot about finances. You know, I think the last couple of years have made us feel there are things that we can't control and that people want to have more control over their finances. I think that they want to be more independent. Those are all things that we talk about a lot with clients. And how do you get that personal independence and that freedom? And, you know, and I think a lot of people make goals around improving relationships.
Do you find that people are successful more than maybe we think they are? I mean, every time I hear about New Year's resolutions, everybody's like, well, I'm going to try this, but unfortunately, I couldn't do it. Are there people who are successful?
Well, there's, you know, research shows 20% of us are. So there are some that are successful. And I really think that if we made those New Year's resolutions yearly goals and that we paid attention to them all the time, that we could all be a lot more successful.
Lee Richardson, a professional counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center. Coming up, your boss may be watching your work-from-home computer.
What are your 2022 business goals? Simplified IT, more security? Dell Technologies has the expertise to help you. From transforming your digital workspaces to providing comprehensive end-to-end IT solutions, get high-performance computers featuring Windows 11 Pro with powerful hardware-based security and savings up to 45% during Dell's New Year event sale. Get special financing through Dell Financial Services. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal on This Weekend. Just because you're working from home doesn't mean your boss isn't watching you at home. Career coach Julie Bakke, president and chief career strategist at the Bakke Group, is here with more. Julie, how are bosses monitoring their employees who work from home?
There's a variety of different tools that employers are using, and there is, then they can decide which of those features in the software they want to use. So is it a leap to say, you know, we're looking at, they're monitoring things like keystrokes, what websites you visit. They're looking at how much time are you actually spending away from your computer. And it's not much of a reach to say, and then we're going to say, what are you doing with that away time? I think this is an extremely slippery slope. And, you know, when you know, it's sort of like when you think about when we were all in the office. You know, people, leaders, managers could walk around, see what you were doing. Are you hanging out around the coffee pot? Are you, you know, shooting the breeze at your your coworker's cubicle? What are you actually doing? It was sort of an eyes on sort of a thing. Now they're saying, well, wait a minute, you know, you're at home. How do we know what you're doing? And the thing is, employees, human beings will always find ways around this. And we'll always, you know, find a way to, you know, to trick the system.
We're speaking with career coach Julie Bakke. Julie, do they have to tell you that they are monitoring you? And has this led to some legal battles?
You know, they don't have to tell you that they're monitoring you. If you've got an employer issued laptop, the assumption is it's theirs. So they can watch what you're doing. They can monitor it. They can, you know, it's their property. And so just like when you send emails, there's no expectation of privacy. So if you're sending personal emails on your work computer beyond the normal, hey, what are you doing for dinner? And this is where people have really gotten in trouble, is employers are able to go in and see what are you sending in your emails beyond what websites that you're visiting.
Julie, you mentioned earlier that some employees have figured out ways to get around this by, you know, hitting a keystroke here and there. What if you're not that technologically savvy, but you don't like this? Is there something you can do? Can you talk to your boss? Can you say, don't do this? What do you do?
So I don't think going to your boss and saying, I'm not comfortable with this. Because if it's being done, it's being implemented probably systems-wide, or the system is being set up so that they can go in and monitor people they expect are not doing their job. I think going in and saying, look, I understand this is the new company. I understand this is a company policy. You know, Fred told me that he got called in because of this. And I just need to say up front, I'm uncomfortable with this. I'm doing my job. Would you agree I'm doing my job? You know, you say I'm the top performer on the team. And, you know, what are our options here? And, even talk to human resources. You know, this is where sometimes getting a group of people together and talking to HR and saying, you know, we're really uncomfortable with this is, you know, it can be a good thing. And so instead of painting everybody with a brush where you're saying we know that you all are stealing company time. And there are plenty of managers and leaders who actually lead that way.
Is this a fair question to ask when you're in a job interview, or would that put you out of the running right off the bat?
Personally, I think it's a fair question, but I would tell you that my bias is absolutely that an interview is a 50-50 conversation in which, you know, I saw a meme that said it was something like, you know, when a potential employer asks you for three references, you ought to ask them for three references too, because I believe it really is. Of course, you know, we're not there yet, but I really believe it's a 50-50. I'm interviewing you to determine, is this a place where I can be successful? And employers are still not used to very pointed and probing questions from job seekers, because at some level they still believe they have all the power. But I think that pendulum is swinging rather quickly. And you're going to have people saying, you know, tell me, how do you monitor productivity? You know, how do you look at people who take, you know, all of their vacation time? You know, how, what is the culture around here for people who, you know, who work hard but don't typically like to work from 8 to 5, might like to take from 2 to 3 off to go to my kid's soccer game? You know, how is that looked at here? And those are really scary questions for job seekers to ask, because we still have in our brain, they have something I want. So I'm hoping that we make that switch over time. And I believe we will, because the pendulum has swung hard in the other direction. And it's not going to go back ever, probably.
Career coach Julie Bakke. Coming up, why Van Gogh is making a modern-day comeback.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
The star of the 2021 Entertainment World, an immersive Van Gogh exhibit. Mark and Watch's Charles Passy has more on this novel way to experience art and joins us now. Charles, explain what this exhibit is exactly.
This is not your traditional museum exhibit. I mean, there are dozens of these that are being presented across the U.S., across North America, across the world. What you really have to think of it is, imagine that there were, you know, essentially photographic images of the works, you know, essentially reproductions of the works or just photos of the works that are portrayed, that are projected rather, in these cavernous venues. I mean, we're talking, you know, venues that normally house conventions.
They're bringing in millions, but does it cost a lot to set them up?
No, actually, I mean, one of the reasons that I think promoters have really seized upon this idea is that, I mean, relatively speaking, they're not expensive. First of all, Van Gogh's works are in the public domain, so you don't have to pay any licensing fees to essentially create one of these events. The cost, you know, one promoter I spoke to said costs about $250,000 to set up the exhibit, to set up the images or whatever, to create the movie, if you will. And then there's probably an expense anywhere between $50,000 to $75,000 in each venue you set up, to secure the venue, to essentially, you know, set up the projectors. Obviously, there's going to be ongoing staffing costs as well.
Charles, is this immersive art exhibit idea a new one? Has this been around at all?
You know, certainly with the Van Gogh ones, you're talking about this goes back about a decade. The idea, this also sort of falls into the realm of digital art, which is an emerging field. So, you know, we're talking probably there, you know, going back a generation at most, but it's becoming hotter and hotter and hotter, and very much a counterpoint to the museum world.
We're speaking with Charles Passy of MarketWatch. Charles, do these exhibits bring out people who normally would not go to museums and say museums are boring or dull? Is this appeal to kids or a different kind of art person?
Absolutely. What is clear from talking to promoters is that this has a very wide audience. It does include traditional museum goers, which actually surprised me. But I would say that the target market is the non-traditional museum goer. And in fact, the gentleman, Bruce Patterson, an Australian exhibition promoter, who is often credited with being kind of the first in this field. He started doing these Van Gogh things, like I say, about a decade ago was the earliest. He was at the fore of this. He said the idea for this occurred to him after taking his kids, who I assume were much younger then, about 15 years ago, his kids to museums in France and Italy. You know, he thought he'd show them the great arts of the world and the great museums of the world, and the kids kept asking for ice cream, or gelato, as he said. You know, he realized that his kids were not engaged, and he said, there's got to be a different way. Well, this became the different way.
I would assume, though, that there are critics of this kind of thing, especially people in the art world.
Oh, boy, are there. So anyhow, yeah, you find a lot of people in the museum world who just think this is kind of, you know, cheesy entertainment. I mean, they don't think it's at best they think it's cheesy entertainment. At worst, they think it's a horrific representation, particularly of Van Gogh's work. You know, you don't get the texture of the painting. You don't get the kind of intimacy of seeing a work up close. They feel like, you know, it's exploitative. It's not the way to experience art. So there are a lot of traditional people in the museum world and the art world who have been sounding the alarm about this. But I would say it's, in some ways, it's a losing battle. The people are voting. And as I say, you know, one of the main promoters told me he has sold 4.5 million tickets to his various events across, to his various Van Gogh exhibitions across North America.
Market Watch's Charles Passy. With the new year just underway, we seem to have mixed feelings about 2021. According to a new poll from CBS and SSR of Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, for 42% of Americans, 2021 was a year filled mostly with happiness. But for 40%, 2021 was filled mostly with sadness. But while 2021 may not have been a very happy year for many Americans, it was an improvement over the previous year for many people. 12 months ago, over half of Americans described the year 2020 as being filled with mostly sadness. 52% described 2020 as filled with sadness, compared with only 22% who described the year as happy. Though views of 2021 are mixed, most Americans feel hopeful when looking at 2022. 71% of Americans say they personally feel mostly hopeful, while just 22% feel mostly discouraged. Most Americans feel hopeful regardless of how they feel about the past 12 months, though those with a happier outlook on the past year are more likely to be hopeful than those who view the last 12 months with sadness. The poll of 1,900 adults was conducted between December 14th and 22nd. That'll do it for this weekend. I'm Jennifer Kishinka.